Welcome to the EQ Fit Podcast. Our mission is to equip people to prosper in every aspect of their life. Whether you're at home or in the workplace, we explore practical ways of improving success, satisfaction, finding balance, and building enjoyable and beneficial relationships. Thank you for joining us. The topic that I want to focus on today is one I think all of us struggle with, and that is, how do you master the art of setting boundaries? Boundaries are really misunderstood in a lot of ways, but if we can focus in on what boundaries are and how they can help us, I think it'll be very helpful to all of us. And I struggle with this as much as anybody else. I love people. I love relationships. I don't want to disappoint people. I don't want to let people down. But what I've learned over the decades of experience in doing organizational development and leadership coaching and just life, I've learned that there is a balance that needs to be reached. And the only way to have the right balance in your life is to set good boundaries in every aspect of your life. And even if that's boundaries you're setting with yourself for your health, your well-being, whatever that happens to be. Well, as I've said, this can be one of the greatest struggles that many individuals face. And that's both personally and professionally. You got to set clear and effective boundaries. Now, the challenge of boundary setting often comes up from kind of a internal fear of disappointing other people, a little bit of what I've mentioned before. This fear, frequently rooted in empathy and really a genuine desire to help or to please others, inadvertently, it leads to overcommitment, exhaustion, burnout, and even resentment. And I can remember earlier in my life, and still now to some degree, I have trouble saying a small two-letter word, and that's no. I really want to say yes, and I say it as much as I can, but I've also learned that no is a really good initiation point for setting boundaries. Now, I'm not saying use no everywhere, but let's get deeper into this concept of boundaries and balance and what this means. So I want you to consider something. Have you ever felt yourself saying yes to tasks or invitations or favors when you knew that your plate was already overflowing? This pattern of behavior not only harms your productivity, but also can negatively impact your mental and emotional well-being. And you're never going to find balance in life if you don't take those things into account. Over time, failing to establish clear limits can leave you feeling exploited, frustrated, and undervalued. I'm going to share a story with you. I've had several come back to me and say, Steve, we love your stories. Put your stories back in. Okay, fine. Here we go. Now, this one's interesting because this story has actually happened many times in many different organizations and different outcomes, but I think I'm going to pick on one in my mind and share that one with you. One of the most common challenges I see when I'm coaching people in their personal and professional lives is a lack of boundary-setting skills. I tend to use this phrase, boundaries and balance, a lot because you just can't find a good balance in life and in work unless you have good boundaries. And so I've worked with many different small business owners over the years, senior leaders in those organizations. This story actually could be applied to many of them. They have a deep desire to bring their faith values into their workplace. So I work with a lot of people of faith, of the Christian faith. And I've worked with some of other faiths. I'm not discriminatory, but of course I that's my belief system. And so, you know, I resonate very closely with people who have a similar faith walk. And what I love about that is that Christian business owners and Christian leaders want to bring their faith into the workplace. And of course, you have to do it in a way that makes sense, right? You can't force it down anybody's throat. That's not what this is all about. It really is about a really good set of values that create a really nice culture. And there's nothing wrong with that. You've got to base those values in something, right? Might as well be faith. So as I'm working with these people, these values are things like grace, forgiveness, trust, integrity, joy, and there's so many more. I applaud their effort because I believe it's critical to practice the values that you hold dear, no matter where you are in your life, whether you're at home or at work or wherever you are. I think it's really important that your core values come out and that you're living your life and practicing the way you do things from those core values. So for this story, I'm thinking of several different individuals that I've worked with. The first boundary that I want to explore, which is really going to be the only boundary in this episode, is second chances. I am all for second chances, or what many people might call grace. The conflict arises when that practice is in opposition with being a good steward of what you've been given. So if you're a business owner or a senior leader, and you're given a lot of responsibility, and you're trying to maintain the health of the organization, while at the same time, you want to practice grace with people. And sometimes those can be at odds. Let's talk a little bit about that. Let me share a specific example that I think will help here. Now, I'm going to switch back and forth. This is a conversation, so I'll tell you who's saying what. First, let's talk about the owner. This is what the owner said to me. I have this individual who does good work when I redirect them. Then they go back to doing the minimum later. Me, what have you tried to help this change? Owner, I try to manage them more closely. Me, how is that working? Owner, not that great because I'm so busy. Sometimes I just forget. What do I do? Me, would you agree that is your energy and motivation that brings this individual back into alignment with performance standards? The owner answers yes. Me, is that the way you want to continue this professional relationship? Owner, no way. I hate being a micromanager, and it just feels wrong that I have to do that. Me, okay. So what would good look like in this situation? Owner, I want this person to take ownership of their responsibilities, and I want them to perform at a higher level consistently. Me, okay. What have you done to make that happen? Owner, now there was a long pause before he answered me. I don't know. Not much, I guess. Me, would you like to set some boundaries to change this behavior for good? Owner, absolutely. He was very adamant about that, by the way. Me, and if this individual chooses not to engage, are you willing to move on and find someone better suited to the role and to the expectations? Now, again, the owner took a long time to think this one through. And this is the crux of the issue. You've got to be willing to apply consequences. You've got to be willing to balance between second chances or grace and being a good steward of the responsibilities, the people that you have. He finally said, I really don't like letting somebody go, but I just can't keep doing this. So, yes, I guess I am. Me. I'm glad to hear you say that. So let's assess what we know. If I understood what you told me, they adjust when you redirect them. In essence, they're going to perform at the level they're comfortable with until you tell them that's not acceptable. Then they change until the next time that you have to redirect them. The reason this is not sticking is because the consequences of falling back into subpar performance are not significant enough for them to maintain those higher levels of performance. So this means they're currently not owning their responsibilities and performance level. They're waiting for you to dictate that. Owner, that is exactly right. How do I change this? This is me responding to the owner. Let's create the boundaries you need to make this shift. Now, I'm going to walk you through exactly what I told this owner so that maybe this helps you. Number one, you need to set clear expectations with this individual and express your disappointment with their performance, but do that in a professional manner. Without them understanding how this is impacting you, they will probably not understand how important or urgent it is for them to make the changes. Number two, you need to confirm that they understand what you want the same way that you understand it. You need to help this individual understand that sustaining the expectations and making the needed changes is not optional. Number three, you will need to define consequences. Without clearly defined consequences, there is no accountability. As a matter of fact, I've created a whole online course on cultivating accountability because that's how critical accountability is to the health of an organization and, frankly, to the health of individuals in an organization. Number four, next, set specific times to review their progress with them. This provides the needed oversight and supervision while allowing known times for this person to ask their questions and to realign with any changes that may need to be made. Number five, you can make this a formal performance improvement plan. As a matter of fact, I did recommend that to this owner because sometimes the verbal discussions, especially if you have the verbal discussions over and over and over, and there are no applied consequences to leverage change, the verbal stuff just doesn't seem to work sometimes. So I did recommend a written formal performance improvement plan. Number six, set a specific future date to decide about their ongoing future with the organization. Make them aware of that date and aware of what that decision time is all about. Give them the resources and the guidance needed, but set this whole process up in a way that puts the ownership of their performance and success on them and not on you. You cannot make someone successful, but you can create the environment where they can choose to be successful. Those are the six steps or boundaries that I talked to this owner about. Now, there is a happy ending to this story. The employee received the message, took it to heart, and made the needed changes. Unfortunately, in other situations like this, where I have coached leaders or owners of organizations, employees chose not to travel the success pathway. And you know where that led, right? They're no longer there. It wasn't going to work out. What is the moral of this story? There is no balance without boundaries. Grace and second chances are something I believe in. However, I also believe in being a good steward of what we manage. Finding the balance between these two is very important. So the story I just shared was focused on leaders and owners of organizations, but really a lot of what I do and the insights I share with people can impact every aspect of life. You could be a stay-at-home parent, you could be a grandparent, it doesn't matter. It is the processes, it is the understanding of how we leverage certain things like boundaries to get the right balance. And so whether this is in an organizational setting or whether it's in a personal relationship or at home or wherever that is, these processes, these steps work. So let's get back to setting boundaries. When we set boundaries with other people, it can be one of the most difficult things to do. So let's dive deeper into practical ways to do that successfully. At its core, the difficulty with setting boundaries often stems from emotional hurdles rather than practical ones. And I see this a lot. The fear of disappointing or hurting others' feelings creates internal pressure that compels us to overextend ourselves. Many people mistakenly equate saying no with being selfish or uncaring or unprofessional. And while there may be times that's the case, it usually is not. Saying no is not necessarily a bad thing. So when we think about this idea of the fear, this misconception significantly hampers somebody's ability to draw and maintain healthy boundaries. And that's, have you ever heard the phrase, good fences make good neighbors? This is the kind of thing we're talking about. Sometimes we need to have those boundaries to protect our personal space. And it doesn't mean that we want to keep everybody out. It just means that for us to operate at our optimal level, we have to be very thoughtful about how much we take on. And I see people all the time, and I know you've seen them too. Oh yeah, I can do that. No problem. I got that. And then it doesn't happen. And that is someone who either is overconfident or overwhelmed or overextended. Just use any of the over words, right? But the key here is setting good boundaries so you can find that good balance. In our modern life, we've got all this digital connectivity that adds to this whole load that we're carrying. It constantly blurs the lines between personal time and professional obligations. And without clear boundaries, the demands of work and relationships can seep into every aspect of our lives, which leaves us very little room for self-care or rejuvenation. I want to spend a minute on self-care. It's funny. I'm a boomer, a boomer generation, and my generation is horrible about this self-care thing. Some of them have got it figured out, but a lot of us, and it's not just our generation, it's many different generations, many different people feel that, oh, that self-care thing, that's selfishness. That's no. When the oxygen mask drops in the airplane, what are you supposed to do? You put it on yourself first so you can help other people. That's what self-care is. If you're a leader, I don't care where you lead, at school, at home, at work, wherever you are, you've got to take care of yourself first so you can be at your best to lead other people. That it's profitability, it's productivity. It just makes sense to do those things. So I guess what I'm trying to do is put a pin in this balloon, this myth of what self-care is, so that we can get to a better place and a better understanding. I'm not talking about indulging yourself and avoiding your responsibilities. I think that's what some people think of when they think of self-care. This is just common sense stuff here. So that's an important part of what we need to do to be ready and to help other people. Now, let's move into the what can emotional intelligence do for us when it comes to this concept of setting boundaries? This is critical. Please don't miss this, because at the core of the resistance to set boundaries are emotional drivers. I guarantee it. If you dig deep enough, in every time you're thinking about setting a boundary or needing to set a boundary but hesitant to do it, at the core of that will be an emotional driver of some sort. Emotional intelligence is a very powerful skill set that provides us the tools necessary to recognize, understand, manage our emotions and the emotions of other people, how to navigate those emotions in other people. It's the cornerstone of emotional intelligence, and that cornerstone is self-awareness, where we do understand these emotions, we understand the patterns, how they impact us, what our normal ways of reacting are. But there's another part here. If we can get to a place of assertive communication, the ability to express yourself clearly, respectfully, but firmly without feeling guilty or aggressive, that assertive communication is really important, because that is going to give you the power to set the boundaries that you need. And I know a lot of us, me being one, are highly relational people. On a DISC assessment, we would be a very high I, that really care for relationships and wanting to work with other people and wanting to please other people. I mean, I struggled with that in an unhealthy way for a lot of years until I realized I wasn't pleasing anybody because I was so overextended that I couldn't even live up to my obligations, which is kind of silly if you think about it. So here's the deal. When you enhance your emotional intelligence, you learn to discern the difference between genuine obligations and perceived social pressure. Think about that just a minute, because that's a big deal. You gain clarity about your limits, which in turn allows you to communicate them confidently and compassionately. Now, it's one thing if somebody comes to you, and a lot of times you'll get this at church, you'll get this with friends. Hey, can you help do whatever? And you say, you know, I probably should say yes. You're thinking this in your mind. But it's one thing to just say no. It's another thing to say, you know what? That sounds like a really important effort or a really important thing to accomplish. But right now, my plate is so full, I can't in good conscience take that on. That's a way of saying no that isn't disrespectful. It's respectful, but it's also truthful. You have to be true to yourself. So as you enhance your emotional intelligence skills, you're going to find ways to facilitate your boundary setting. Emotional intelligence helps us recognize that saying no or not right now isn't about rejecting the other person, but rather honoring your existing commitments and your well-being. And that's very important. You know, I'm learning a lot in life about essentialism and simplifying life. And the last move we made 6 months, 8 months ago, whenever it was, boy, did we get rid of a lot of stuff. Boxes that I hadn't opened from the last two moves. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing in our world today that really does carry some weight on our lives. There is an emotional burden to all of this stuff in our lives. And I'm not just talking about material things, but just think about these skills, these emotional intelligence skills, as a way to empower you and equip you to say no when you need to say no. That's important. But you can be respectful. You can decline additional responsibilities without damaging relationships when you do it in an emotionally intelligent manner. Okay, let's start to bring this together. The last decade or so, I've really done a deep dive, of course, in neuroscience and emotional intelligence, but also in habit formation and habit transformation. And I want to apply some of that thinking here, because part of setting good boundaries to get the balance you need in your life is about the habits and patterns that are already in your life, the way that you have lived your life up to this point. So while emotional intelligence equips you to understand and communicate your limits effectively, habit transformation ensures that these boundaries become an ingrained part of your daily routine. That's a very important part of this equation. And if we don't have that, then we're constantly going back and starting over again. So here are some actionable strategies to build boundary setting into sustainable habits. Daily reflection rituals. That sounds somewhat religious, maybe, and I don't mean it that way. At the end of each day, take a few minutes and review your commitments and your tasks and ask yourself, what drained my energy today? What gave me energy and fulfilled me today? And what boundaries could I reinforce tomorrow? I think those are really good questions. And if we don't have those kind of daily checkpoints, a lot of people call it mindfulness. There's nothing weird about mindfulness. It's just being mindful of what's going on in your life. I think those are good questions to reflect on every day. This habit of reflecting reinforces our awareness of our limits, and it also helps us to make necessary adjustments proactively, instead of trying to go back and fix something where you should have said no when you said yes. It's so much easier to take care of things proactively. So here's another one. Practice assertive communication. We've talked about that. Regularly practice assertively communicating your boundaries in low-stakes situations first, so there isn't a lot at risk, right? For example, politely decline an unnecessary meeting invitation or request additional time to consider new requests. Practicing this actually builds a habit which builds your confidence and normalizes healthy boundary setting behavior. And honestly, for a lot of us, that may be what it takes to get us started down this road of setting good boundaries. Is let's take some low-risk stuff first, start to figure out how to make this boundary setting a habit, and then we can practice on the more medium-risk and high-risk areas when those things come our direction. Here's another thing. Set clear digital boundaries. This is so big, and I know a lot of people don't know this, but if you've ever been scrolling Instagram, YouTube, it doesn't matter what it is, LinkedIn even. If you've been scrolling social media and then you look up and it's an hour, hour and a half later and you haven't moved, that probably isn't all that healthy. And I know a lot of people will say to me, but that's my enjoyment. Here's what I'm going to say to you. Maybe it is, and that's okay. And I'm not saying don't do it, but what I'm saying is be honest with yourself. Is that giving you energy and recharging your batteries, or is it just time wasted? Just be honest. And if it really does recharge you, great, good for you. But I do know through science that lots of time on platforms, smartphones, pads, computers, whatever, doesn't really do that for most people. So set clear digital boundaries. Establish specific times during your day when you can disconnect from digital devices. So much of us work on digital devices for work. So you need time to get away from that. And I know when I get in creator mode, when I'm writing a book, when I'm creating an online class or something like that, or I'm working on a specific proposal or something, boy, I can get locked in. And it'll be 3 hours later, and all of a sudden I look up and go, it's dark outside. I need to do a little better job of self-care. And that means give your brain some time to rest and recharge. Give yourself some of those breaks. Also, create a priority filter. Before committing to new tasks or favors, pause and evaluate them through a priority filter. I love this. Ask yourself questions like this. Does this align with my personal or professional goals? What must I sacrifice to accommodate this commitment? That question right there is absolutely gold. Because if you have a mindset of, if I'm going to take something else on, I have to give something else up, that's going to help you to set boundaries more effectively. And another question is accepting this task genuinely beneficial, or am I doing it to avoid disappointing somebody? I think these are all fair questions. So how do we sustain this boundary setting long term? Ultimately, boundary setting is about valuing your own time, energy, focus, and your emotional health enough to protect them consistently. When boundaries become habitual and rooted in emotional intelligence, you can experience greater satisfaction, improve relationships, enhance professional performance. So remember, saying no doesn't make you selfish. It makes you strategic. Healthy boundaries empower you to offer your best self to people while respecting your own needs and limitations. If you can cultivate these skills, it will significantly reduce feelings of resentment and burnout, which is going to allow you more balance in your life, a feeling of being more productive, more profitable, more successful, and overall, just more joy and fulfillment in life. And isn't that where we all want to be? Thank you for joining us for this episode. If you have any questions about this week's episode, or maybe a suggestion for future episodes you'd like us to explore, please contact us through our website at eqfit.org. For more information and inspiration, connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube at EQFit.